And you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA, irishradio.com. My guest is Jack Hare, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Concern Worldwide US. And Jack, you're very welcome indeed.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
How on earth did you wind up with, considering your very stellar career, and at a time when most very successful executives would be looking to, pull back to chill, you take on this mammoth job as the new CEO of Concern. Who grabbed you?
Well, there's an easy answer to that question. The person that got to me was Tom Moran,
who is
the recently retired CEO of Mutual of America, as you know, a very generous and a long time chairman of Concern Worldwide in the U.S. And he is a longtime friend, somebody that I admire a lot. I've served on the board of Concern with him for 17 or 18 years.
Yes.
And I was clearly talking when I should have been listening.
Well, let me say you are indeed most welcome aboard, and I know that you're coming at a time when Concern Worldwide are actually revamping, rolling out perhaps some new alternative plans, or are these in addition to what Concern has been doing all along?
Well, Concern is has grown across the world. The need for the services, both humanitarian and in health and in emergency response and in climate smart agriculture, are vast. And Concern has been very, very effective in creating programs that are long-term in nature and sustainable. We're also very quick to respond to emergencies in certain areas. So, and Concern's presence in the United States and our partnership with donors has been growing pretty aggressively over the last little bit.
Of course, that they're most listeners, indeed, to my program, if you're getting a bit long on the truth, would know that the founders of Concern and Concern Worldwide were the Finucane brothers, Father Angus the Finucane in particular, from Limerick, and their mission was a continuation of a tradition that Ireland was pretty good at, and in exporting a great number of clergy and priests, nuns, and then lay people into corners of the world that was very closely connected with vocation. That was it. You didn't, when you went as a missionary, from Ireland, there was no real expectation that you would be coming back anytime soon. By the time the Finucanes, and you can correct me on this, but by the time that the Finucane brothers, or Father Angus in particular, started that, they took and had a vision of not just teaching catechism, or, you know, our impression in Ireland was that that the priest went out with a big stick to beat Catholicism into people who were actually who had little or nothing, and that the religious aspect of it became secondary. It was the first time, though, that we saw, you know, the founders saying, you know, there are bigger problems. There are emergencies, yes, but sustainability is, you know, is something that has to be addressed. That was a mighty, you know, huge nut to crack back, you know, again, 68, as we got into the 70s.
Yeah.
It's still a huge, huge nut, and things don't seem like, you know, that generally in terms of third world countries and the places where concern and other NGOs are more prominent, seem like the problem is, if anything, getting worse. Is there an explanation, a reasonable explanation for that?
Well, you're absolutely right that Father Angus and Father Jack back in 1968, you know, realized the depths of the need. They were missionaries in Nigeria. It was during the Biafran Civil War, and you know, they were very practical that you know, they needed to stay in the country, that they needed to you know, help the people survive, you know, most of all, first of all. And you know, the story of the fire that was in their belly is legendary here among the founders.
Yes.
The need in that part of the world, in Haiti, the need, whether the you know, the emergency is natural or man-made, like the you know, Syrian civil war and the refugee crisis that it has created. You know, there does seem to be a huge need. It does seem to be a growing need when you have, you know, El Nino that is causing, tremendous pressures on harvests, you know, in Africa and various other places. So, you know, there are successes, but the needs are ever present.
Can we at least in part look towards governments' management or mismanagement, or are there just more people who we're discovering need more? Is there a common theme?
There are a few common themes. You know, in terms of the need for a, you know, climate smart agriculture, so you don't create a overdependence on certain drugs, food products that end up taking away the nutrition from the soil, and then sort of leading to a cycle of famine and loss. So, you know, we have to address as best we can the need for, you know, smart, sustainable agriculture. Clearly, we work with governments in virtually every country in which we operate, all 30, to, you know, try to, you know, not be duplicative and to support their work for their people. We're a guest in those countries.
To the whole theory that concern worldwide, we're probably the first, and if not the first, the most notable non-governmental organization to say, okay, we have taken care of the emergency situation, the flood, drought, war, numerous aspects of where devastation is taking place. But we have to, we can't just leave these people, you know, and rely upon, you know, charity, food drops or something. That has become the staple of concern.
We, you know, we're not there just when the cameras are there. We stay beyond the news headlines. You know, the places that we go, we are addressing what we define as extreme poverty. So places where the asset base of the people that we serve, mm-hmm. you know, is so small that they can't bounce back from an emergency. You know, it's so you know, you need to try to create, you know, economic opportunities, social entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. You need to try to deal with basic needs, you know, clean water, nutrition, health, agriculture, so, you know, people can, you know, sustain themselves, and people can then, you know, build for their families and their future.
Yes.
And, so it's not an in-and-out kind of a thing in the places where we operate.
Is there an order which pertains to each area, depending on when you go in? Is that it doesn't run A to Z? It has to do with the particular situation there. You know, for instance, in education and schools and everything is absolutely terrific. If some of the other necessary, sustainable aspects of life, like food and clean water and whatever. But is there a pattern, geographical pattern that says, okay, for instance, education or building schools or whatever will be that's down the road a piece.
You know, in places. So we're in a number of the refugee camps right now, and most of these, you know, are built up to address the need of, you know, refugees that are, you know, on the march from from Syria to Turkey to Lebanon, and so we can't do all of the work ourselves. We partner with other non-governmental organizations. That's a big part of what we do in the humanitarian organization. You know, in Africa, we dealt with, you know, in Sierra Leone with certain elements of the Ebola crisis.
Right.
Where we provided, you know, clean and honorable burials for people. It's an unusual kind of a thing, but it was a piece of the remedy that had to happen. And so we, you know, the order is, we don't do everything, obviously. We focus on, you know, emergency response. We focus on women and children. We focus on, you know, climate resilience. But education is always a big part of what we do.
Right.
Educating women, educating children, teaching literacy. And so we try to take the piece that we can address in partnership with those that we're working in listening in the villages to do what we can to address the address the situation at hand.
I want to talk a bit about you, Jack Hare, and indeed your background and your awareness that that despite a very busy entrepreneurial decade after decade of your life, that you just didn't wait until now to develop an interest in giving back or reaching into your interest, for instance, in inner city projects and all the rest of it. Do you remember where that came from, or?
You know, I remember I used to be I played sports all my life, and when I got out of college, I was a coach for Little League baseball and soccer teams. But I remember moving to Chicago and going to a Christmas luncheon at a thing called the Off the Street Club, and they had selected each year a boy of the year and a girl of the year. And at this luncheon during the holiday period, they were announcing the boy of the year, who was a young man who had been beat up going to the club because he was crossing sort of neighborhood and gang lines in Chicago. And at the time that I saw that I met him, my oldest son was probably 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And my youngest son was maybe 2 or 3 years old. And I was just reminded how fortunate we are, across America, that, in some of the communities that I've, been able to live in, that, you're not worried about your kid's safety in that way.
Yeah.
And so I, just made up my mind that if I could, help in a small way, I would. That's something that has always been important to me, and I'm happy that my oldest boy is a mentor, to a young fella in Harlem, and it's been a part of our small part of our genetics, but it's important.
You in getting into, you've held like amazing positions, like CEO of Parade Media Group, Parade Magazine, Time Inc. Name it, at that level. You were very well exposed to, to being in a position where there was tremendous demand for charitable donations, contributions. How do you think that that corporate America measures up, in terms of, of meeting the needs of the thousands of charities that are knocking at the door?
It's a hard question, Adrian, because I think many corporations are extraordinary and really generous, and they do it because it's important to the employees that work at the corporation. That people in their communities and their factories, that it's important. We all, in a big town like New York, we all live in neighborhoods, and you care about the people that you know. So I think many corporations are incredibly generous. The Tom Moran's company, Mutual of America, I've never seen a group of people that are that generous. Oftentimes it's fun for people, or they're quick to say, sort of paint the corporations as the man, and it's all for the dollar. And I've had the good fortune of working for the Newhouse family and Time Inc., which always had maybe it's out of the journalistic ethic, a sensitivity to doing the right thing. And And certainly the people that work in these places demand that, they be sensitive to the world in which we live.
Is there a sense that because of the massive needs for, tremendous amounts of money on an ongoing basis, that the downside might be people may get the impression, well, that's out of my league. And thank God, you know, huge corporates and, you know, and the 1%, thank God they're where they are, because what can I do as an individual, and where is my contribution? How is that going to be make any difference?
Yeah, I suppose there's a risk of that, but I think the reality is that, you know, it's up to all of us to see and feel and articulate and the need and the opportunity, and all of us, you know, can make a difference. The, you know, it's a very small amount of dollars that can be incredibly meaningful. You know, you can, you know, we had a fellow here that was talking about one of our cargo trucks was impounded at a border, and, you know, we needed to get $800 together to get it out, to get into the country, to distribute the emergency kits and information. You know, having $800 is not something that a lot of people can contribute in one, but collectively, coming together, yes, we can all make a big difference.
The new plan, the extended plan and new approach that we barely know much about going forward, is that an addition to everything? Is that an addition? And what is the need for a broader plan at this point?
I wouldn't. It's an extension of all of the work that we've done here. I'd say there are three or four areas of focus: being ready, being trained, being skilled at emergency response, both, you know, to be ready, to have the resources to be able to move quickly when people need it, to be able to be smart and a helpful partner and advisor on really smart agricultural programs, to focus on, you know, maternal child, you know, welfare and health care opportunities, nutrition, education are the areas. And then trying to share the best ideas, to share the best programs, to celebrate what we've done that has been very successful so others can copy it or others can make it better, and to celebrate the things we've done that haven't been successful so people won't make the same mistakes we made.
My guest, Jack Hare, I don't think we'd have to go too far back in your own DNA to find that, as with millions of others, that the Irish fleeing the famine in particular, and that under the worst of circumstances, but not only the forced emigration of the famine, but before then and since then, the Irish in particular have had, you know, an eye on America and have contributed tremendously to them. Have you looked much at your own lineage? Have you found where your people are from and what put them on that immigrant ship?
Yeah, it was, you know, going back to my great grandparents, who was in the 1850s and 60s that they left Ireland, came through Ellis Island. Their names were O'Hare, which was spelled O-H-E-H-E-G-R-E, O'Hare, which at Ellis Island they simplified to Hare, yes. H-A-I-R-E, and the O'Sullivans and the Bretts, you know, they came from the middle of Ireland, they came from the north. I still have a brother and a sister who've gone back, who have houses up in Donegal near Carrigart. So it's in a little village called Glen. So it's, you know, it's very close.
1860, that wouldn't have taken much planning in terms of leaving, devastation. And I think maybe, perhaps, and not because I say it, but there is a tremendous analogy in terms of how the Irish, in good times and in bad, through Celtic tigers and downturns, that the Irish are particularly sensitive to needs beyond, beyond their own borders. You find that per capita, those who live in Ireland and those who've come from Ireland have this almost this keen awareness or part guilt that says, you know, I have to do something, and many times that is without, it's in the subconscious there, but it has to have some particular tie and meaning to the famine.
We've just gone through not long ago a very difficult period in Ireland, and there have been tigers, and there have been busts, and I will tell you this, it's amazing. One of the real joys for me of this job is being around people who have, without exception, this broader view beyond just self and, what train am I getting on, where am I going, but, that are generous, that are, in small ways and big ways, but generosity and helping others is an amazing thing, and the Irish have it, and the people that surround Concern have it, and it's enriching to be a part of.
We want to give both the phone number and for those who are listening on the New York metropolitan area, Concern Worldwide, Concern U.S. is located in the heart of Manhattan. Their office is at 355 Lexington Avenue. And the website where you'll get most of the information. The telephone number, by the way, is 1-800-CONCERN, CONCERN, and the website is concernusa.org. You have a dinner, you have your annual...
Thank you, Adrian. Yeah, we have our Women of Concern luncheon is coming up on June 2nd. It's open to all. It's at the Pierre Hotel. If you'd like any information, we're our honoree this year is a very impressive young woman named Kate Waters. It's going to be a tremendous lunch, tremendous day. And we have events, throughout the year, a golf outing in July. And we have a nice office in Chicago with activities there. But if people have an interest, we'd love to have them stop by.
And we will link Concern and Concern's website to ours at Irish Radio. And again, I want to welcome you and thank you for the time we got to.
Thank you, Andrew. It was great to be here with you, and so much appreciated.
Thank you, friends. Again, it's concernusa.org. And again, if you log on to, or if you're listening to us on irishradio.com, then we will link you directly. And as you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.